if you're engaging with decentralized finance, money markets, you know, lending, borrowing, leveraging, you're playing in an incredibly powerful automated system. But here's the brutal and honestly often devastating truth.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who lose money in DeFi don't lose it because the platform itself fails. They lose it because they just fatally misunderstand the speed and the severity of automated liquidation.
That's the reality. I mean, risk management in this space, it's not some theoretical exercise or just a line item on a spreadsheet. It is the core competency. It's what separates the sustainable participants from the, let's say, the short-lived ones.
Right.
So today, we're on a critical mission. We've synthesized key risk management fundamentals, some practical exercises, and we're going to transform all those complex, high-stakes concepts into a concrete action plan for you, the listener.
So the goal is to build a kind of shield.
Exactly. A personalized liquidation shield to protect your capital.
Okay, let's unpack this. We have to start with the core danger, right? The liquidation mechanics. Everyone hears the word liquidation, but what does it really truly mean in a DeFi context? And how fast does it actually happen?
At its core, liquidation is the forced, automatic sale of your collateral to repay your debt. It's completely hands-off. The trigger is, well, it's instantaneous. The moment your health factor, or HF, drops below that critical threshold of 1.0.
So it's not an alert, it's not a warning email, it's...
Oh, it's the execution.
It is the execution. An automated fire sale of your assets run by competitive bots. So why? Why does that health factor drop?
It drops because the ratio of your collateral value to your debt has just fallen too low. And there are three primary forces at play here, and they often act together.
Okay.
The most common is a collapse in the price of your collateral. I mean, if you post Ether and Ether crashes 30%, the security backing your loan is suddenly worth a lot less.
Simple supply and demand shock.
Oh.
Makes sense.
Exactly. The second reason is slower, but it's steady. It's the accrued interest. Your debt subtly increases every single minute. You borrow 10,000 USDC today, tomorrow you owe a little bit more. And that slowly erodes your buffer.
And the third?
The third is the most lethal. It's the double whammy, where the price of your collateral is dropping while the interest on your loan just keeps ticking up. And all this time, liquidation bots are scanning the entire network, just looking for that split second when a position hits 0.999.
I was stunned when I read in our sources that the cost of failure isn't just losing your assets, it's losing them at a penalty. You actually pay a bot to liquidate you.
It's crucial to grasp this. This incentive structure is everything. When a liquidator bot repays a part of your debt, they get your collateral in return, but they get it at a subsidized rate. It's a bonus.
The liquidation penalty.
The liquidation penalty, yes. Depending on the protocol, it's typically 5 to 10% of the collateral that's being seized. This bonus ensures that liquidators are always, always incentivized to jump in instantly and protect the protocol from bad debt.
Let's make that penalty real. So if your $10,000 collateral position gets liquidated and the penalty is 10%, you have immediately and permanently lost $1,000 of your principal.
Yes.
And that $1,000, it wasn't used to pay your debt. It was paid to a bot for the service of liquidating you. That makes just, you know, coasting or waiting it out impossible.
That impossibility is shown so powerfully in that flash crash scenario we looked at. Let's imagine a position. You deposit 10 ETH as collateral. ETH is at $2,000, so your collateral is worth $20,000.
Okay.
And you borrow 12,000 USDC against that. The protocol's liquidation threshold, the LT, is 85%.
That feels pretty leveraged already, to be honest.
It is. Now, imagine a rapid, sudden 40% crash in the market. The price of ETH instantly drops from $2,000 to $1,200. Your $20,000 collateral is now only worth $12,000.
Wait, so your collateral value is now exactly equal to your debt?
And when you run the math on the health factor, the ratio of collateral value adjusted by the LT versus the debt, it instantly drops to 0.85. And because the bot is faster than you are liquidated immediately.
Instantly.
Potentially within the same block or even less. There's zero reaction time. If the price drop happens in seconds, you're toast. The bots win. That's the real competition, isn't it? Not the market, but the speed of execution.
That is terrifying. You have to plan for that worst case scenario because the system has no empathy. It has no clock delays.
Exactly. And that leads us right to your lifeline, the health factor itself. If 1.0 is the point of no return, what margin of safety do you need to target?
The health factor is the metric you have to be obsessively monitoring. It tells you how much space you have before, well, before the guillotine drops.
Yeah.
The higher the number, the more volatility your position can handle.
Yeah.
Our sources define four critical zones, and I think every listener needs to know exactly which zone they're in.
Let's detail them. First, an HF greater than 2.0. This is what we call the safe zone. If you are new to DeFi lending, this is where you should live. You can withstand significant market volatility, maybe even sleep through a major crash without, you know, immediate stress.
Okay, 2.0 is the safe zone. But let's be real for a second. If I'm keeping my HF at 2.0, I'm leaving a lot of capital just sitting there, right? Not being very capital efficient. How do we justify that trade-off?
That's an essential question, and it's the fundamental dilemma of DeFi, really. The justification is that 5 to 10% liquidation penalty. You might earn an extra 2% APY by pushing your leverage, but one missed alert, one gas spike, and you lose 10% instantly. For beginners, sacrificing that short-term efficiency for principal preservation is, well, it's non-negotiable.
Point taken. Safety first, especially when you're facing automated, irreversible losses. So what's the next zone down?
HF between 1.5 and 2.0. This is the watchful zone. Your position is it's adequate, but you absolutely must have automated price and HF alerts set up. You need to be checking the status daily, sometimes more.
And then we get into high alert territory.
HF between 1.2 and 1.5. That's the danger zone. This means you are exposed to high risk. If you're here, you need to be monitoring hourly, and you should already have an action plan ready to go. This is not a sustainable long-term position.
And the absolute red alert.
HF less than 1.2. That is the critical zone. Liquidation is likely with even minor volatility or just interest ticking up. Emergency action adding collateral repaying debt is mandatory and urgent. If you find yourself constantly below 1.2, your entire risk framework is just fundamentally broken.
Let's apply these zones to that gradual risk scenario from the sources. We start with 10 ETH at 2,000, borrowing 12,000. Our initial HF is 1.42. That puts us right in the middle of that danger zone.
Right, requiring constant vigilance from day one.
Okay.
Now imagine some market fear sets in and ETH drops a modest 10% over a week down to 1,800. After interest accrues, that HF slides to 1.27. You've just gotten a flashing red warning. You've lost almost half your initial safety margin in a pretty calm environment.
And now, a panic hits the following week. ETH drops another 10%, down to 1620. That health factor plummets to 1.14.
You are now deep in the critical zone. A small secondary market shock, maybe a 5% drop, or a surge in network activity spiking gas fees, that could push you under 1.0.
So even starting at a seemingly measured position of 1.42 means you're only two small price drops away from irreversible liquidation.
Exactly. And that demonstrates the point perfectly.
Which connects directly to the critical choice of collateral. If two small drops can ruin you with a stable asset, what happens if you choose something highly volatile?
The volatility of your asset dictates everything. Beginners must stick to assets with low or medium volatility. We're talking about the blue chips, ETH, BTC. Even better are liquid staking tokens, LSTs, like Ruth. They're highly correlated to ETH, but they also generate yield, which gives you a slightly larger safety buffer over time.
So if I see an opportunity to yield farm by borrowing against an asset that has a high LTV, but it's a newer, less proven altcoin, that's a hard pass.
That is an absolute hard pass. High volatility assets, especially meme coins or new project tokens, can suffer 50, even 80% crashes faster than you can open your dashboard. The liquidation will be instant, you'll eat that maximum penalty, and your principal will be wiped out.
All right, so we know the danger, we know the metrics. Let's pivot and talk about building the actual defense, the fortress. We need to talk about the safety buffer calculation.
The safety buffer is the percentage difference between your chosen borrowing limit and the protocol's absolute liquidation threshold, or LT. The sources strongly suggest a minimum buffer of 20 to 30% above that LT is necessary.
For the listener, we need to make this conceptual, not just mathematical. If the LT is 85% and I borrow at 55% LTV, what does that 30% buffer mean in real terms?
It means the price of your collateral has to fall by a much larger amount before you're at risk. We can see this with the formula. It's collateral value minus, in parentheses, debt divided by LT, all of that divided by collateral value. So, using the source example, 10,000 in collateral, 6,000 in debt, and an 85% LT. When you plug in those numbers, your safety margin comes out to 29.4%.
So that 29.4% is my breathing room. It's the maximum price drop my collateral can handle before I hit the red line. It's the number you have to watch right alongside your HF.
And this guides our position sizing. Your strategy should be based on your expertise and how much you're willing to monitor.
Let's start with the conservative approach for beginners.
If you're conservative, you should borrow only 40 to 50% of the maximum loan-to-value allowed. This ensures you maintain that HF of greater than 2.0 we talked about. It's the cheapest insurance you can buy.
What about the more aggressive, experienced traders who understand these risks?
If you're aggressive and advanced, you might push your borrowing up to 75 or 80% of the max LTV, but you're maintaining an HF above 1.3. However, this requires high-intensity, daily, proactive monitoring. We cannot stress this enough. The absolute non-negotiable rule is never borrow at the maximum LTV and never let your HF slip below 1.2.
But even the best plans can be ruined by a black swan event. If that HF drops below 1.3, you need an immediate emergency exit plan. What are the three options for rapid de-risking?
The first is debt repayment. This requires having external capital ready to go, but it immediately reduces your debt and causes the biggest jump in your health factor. Second is collateral addition. If you have more ETH or BTC ready to deploy, adding it instantly boosts your buffer. This is often the fastest move you can make.
And the nuclear option?
The emergency exit. This just means repaying the entire loan and withdrawing all your collateral. You lock in whatever potential losses you might have from the price drop, but you successfully avoid that painful 5 to 10% liquidation penalty. You preserve your capital even if you exit a bit poorer.
And we absolutely cannot overlook the operational risk here of network congestion. High volatility events always cause gas fees to spike. You can turn a quick transaction into an hour-long delay or an extremely expensive one.
That's a critical point. You must always have the native gas token, whether that's ETH on mainnet or the token for your L2 ready to go. We've seen so many cases where a user could have saved their position, but they just didn't have the $50 or $100 in gas needed to execute the transaction.
So they were just forced to watch.
Forced to watch their collateral get liquidated by a bot who did pay the gas.
Wow. Okay, let's shift gears now into part 4, traps to avoid and green flags to seek. This covers the behavioral risks, the stuff that tricks even experienced users. What are the major pitfalls?
The biggest behavioral risk right now is what I call the points trap. So many new protocols try to incentivize early deposits by offering these speculative points rewards, which might, you know, eventually turn into a token airdrop.
And people chase that.
They do. Never deposit into a high-risk position solely for these points. It's a classic gambler's fallacy.
I think everyone knows someone who's fallen for this.
It's terrible. I've seen cases where someone borrowed against an extremely volatile altcoin just for a points multiplier. The coin dropped 60%, they got liquidated for a 10% penalty, and the theoretical value of the points they earned didn't even cover the gas fee they spent trying to save the position.
Chasing yield over protecting capital.
Principal preservation always outweighs speculative point value.
What about the technical traps, the ones built into the protocols themselves?
E-mode is a massive trap for beginners. This feature allows for extremely high LTVs, sometimes up to 97%, but only for assets in the same category, like borrowing USDC against USDT.
So what's the danger?
The danger is correlation risk. If USDC briefly depegs to 97 cents, which we have seen happen, and you're borrowed at 97% LTV, well, the 3% shift causes instant liquidation. Avoid E-mode entirely until you are a master of this stuff.
And there's a big misconception about isolation mode. It sounds like it protects the user, but you're saying it doesn't.
It protects the protocol, not the user. It means the asset you borrow against is isolated, risk-wise, from everything else. So if you're one of the few users in a specific isolated market and that market fails, your exposure is concentrated. The protocol might survive, but your capital could take a full isolated loss.
On the operational side, what's a common mistake that makes assets just completely inaccessible?
The classic error is bridging assets without bridging the native gas token. You send $20,000 worth of stablecoins to a layer 2, but you forget to send a tiny amount of that chain's native gas token, you know, Matic for Polygon or ETH for Arbitrum.
So the money is there, but you can't touch it.
Exactly. Your $20,000 is there, but you can't pay the $2 transaction fee to move it. It's trapped. It's vulnerable. Always bridge the native token first. And second, please avoid using unlimited approval on smart contracts. Prefer just-in-time approval to limit potential damage if a contract is exploited later.
All right, let's end on a high note. What are the green flags? The safety features a listener should be proactively looking for when choosing a platform.
Look for protocols that offer consumer protection wrappers. Some major interfaces now advertise insurance or guaranteed funds to protect against smart contract failures. For example, you might see a policy to protect against losses up to a certain threshold. That provides crucial peace of mind that goes way beyond a standard audit.
I really like the sound of auto deleverage. That sounds like an automated rescue feature.
It's the best form of automated risk management, really. Protocols that offer auto deleverage, or ADL, will partially unwind your position selling just enough collateral as it gets close to liquidation. It avoids the catastrophic total loss and the big penalty.
So it's a mechanism that restores your health factor for you.
Automatically. It can save you during those flash crashes when you just can't react quickly enough.
And finally, the liquidity in the vaults themselves is a key indicator.
Absolutely. Only deposit into vaults that have high idle liquidity, ideally greater than 10%. If a vault has zero or near zero idle liquidity, it means all the money is lent out. If there's a sudden rush to withdraw, you might face delays, which is a sign of poor systemic risk management. And last, always, always verify you are using the canonical or official versions of assets on layer twos to avoid depegging risks from third-party bridge wrappers.
This deep dive has, I think, fundamentally changed the way I think about leveraging. It's less about market movement and more about operational speed and risk buffering. To quickly summarize our core action items for you, liquidation is instantaneous and comes with a painful, non-recoverable 5 to 10% penalty. Your health factor is your shield aim to keep it above 2.0, especially as you learn. And finally, you must commit to having capital ready for a rapid, defined exit plan.
If you internalize just those 3 points, you are already far safer than, I'd say, 90% of the leveraged participants in DeFi. Now, we spent this time focusing on avoiding protocol or systemic risk within the lending platform itself. We've established how to prevent an automated failure.
But the market itself introduces a completely different kind of risk, doesn't it?
It does. And the final provocative thought we'll leave you with builds on that concept of collateral volatility. We have to consider asset correlation risk. If you use one highly volatile asset, like ETH, as collateral to borrow another highly volatile asset, like BTC, you are making a huge mistake if you think that's diversification.
Because they often move together.
They are highly correlated. If ETH drops 40%, BTC is likely dropping 35% or more right alongside it. Your entire position is still exposed to a simultaneous unified crash.
So we've built the shield against the bot, but now the listener has to explore how to diversify against the market itself. Correlation is not diversification.
Exactly. We encourage you to analyze how correlated your collateral and your borrowed assets truly are. Use the principles we've discussed, set up those alert thresholds for price drops and HF levels, and use that knowledge to complete your personal risk management framework today. That is how you achieve sustainable participation in DeFi.